The opinions of this podcast are my own and not necessarily the opinions of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Ambassador Real Estate, any realtor associations, persons, or entities. If your property is currently listed with a real estate broker, please note that it is not our intention to solicit the offerings of other real estate brokers.
Welcome back to Hunting Home. Today's guest is Lindsay Bogardis, who is with Ambassador Title Service, also known as ATS. We'll probably say ATS instead of the full title today, Lindsay. But Okay. Welcome into the studio. And I'm excited because we've had a kind of a wide array of people on, but we've never had anyone from title. So you are our title person.
Okay.
And I think this is a great topic because nobody knows what title is. Probably half the people in your family don't even know what you do. It's just this thing that happens that's super, super important and probably doesn't get the notoriety that it needs. So, Lindsay.
Yep, I agree.
Tell us a little bit about you, your background, and maybe how you ended up at ATS.
Yeah, I'm a mom of two boys. They fulfill my life outside of work, keep me really busy. But I started ATS about 3.5 years ago. I came over, I'd previously worked at Clear Title, and then ATS recruited me and I came over and opened their branch in Council Bluffs. Before that, I was at Clear Title. I worked there for about 10 years. Before that, I worked at a bank, but Clear Title recruited me and that's how I got into title insurance.
On to the next one.
Yeah.
So for people that don't know, Lindsay's office at ATS is actually inside of our Berkshire Hathaway office in Council Bluffs, 900 Woodbury. So I get to see Lindsay quite a bit, and it's nice for me because if I can direct a file to her, it's nice that we can talk about it. I can pop over and ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Lindsay's always super good about answering all the questions that I have, even if it's on a file that has nothing to do with Lindsay. If it's at a different title company, she's has enough experience that you've probably dealt with it at some level, at some point.
Yep, I agree.
And so it goes back to the most people don't understand title. And then like, especially when I'm writing up a contract, I always ask, I'm like, do you have a preference for a title? And people are like, what's that?
Yeah.
Or I don't even know a title company. And I said, okay, well, if I can choose, I'll just do this. And this is why. And I tell them exactly what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nice because I can go ask Lindsay a question, and also it's nice to be able to close in our office and just have it all central, one location.
Yeah.
So can you give us an overview on title, on what you do on a daily basis? You know, anything that the everyday consumer probably doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we get the purchase agreement for our realtors, then we open a file and we start by doing the title search. So we're going to look at the property, go back through the records, you know, look at who's had the deed to the property, if they've had any liens against the property. We look at the tax card to see what the taxes are. We look at the county's websites just to look at the survey of the property, those sorts of things. And then we combine all of that information and we make what we call the title commitment. And that tells me, myself as a closer, what I need to do to prepare for closing. So it'll tell me if I need a warranty deed, if I need to get a lien released from a property, if there's an issue on the property. If there's a title issue, it's stated in the title report. I get a copy of the title report. The agents get a copy of the title report. If there's a lender, they get a copy of it. And it just kind of keeps everyone on the same page of this is what needs to happen in order for Clear Title and to execute the closing.
Yep.
On my end, as the closer, I prepare the documents for closing to have the seller sign. I work with the sellers to get any liens released from the property. And then I work on any special things that come up.
Which probably happens more often than people would think.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you're always going to have the property taxes, probably a balance on a mortgage to pay off. But, you know, all the moving parts of people's lives outside of like liens and things like that, just like married couples, just different names on title. I know for me, you know, you get that title report and I'm scrolling down looking to see what's going to pop up, and you just sometimes never know what's going to pop up, you know, things that you're unaware of. A lot of times things that the seller themselves are unaware of.
Yeah, occasionally.
And so I'm sure you deal with stuff like, they're like, well, I didn't know that,
yeah,
you know, that they were going to put that lien against my property.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts, and like, I don't think that maybe even a lot of agents don't even place the importance on the title work, but the consumer definitely is like, they're worried about, you know, and that's why they have people like you and like me to guide them through that process. Otherwise, it would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And most people don't even realize that they need title insurance until it's after closing, and now there's a problem. I just recently had a buyer reach out to me this week, and they said, oh my gosh, we just bought this house in January, and now we're trying to take another loan out on it because they're remodeling it. And they're like, our new title company is telling us there are 4 liens against this property. So I'm like, okay.
And in a case like that, those people have basically inherited that, haven't they? I mean, that they've purchased that property. And
so then they linked me up with their new title company that their loan's going through. And I got the opportunity to talk to that title searcher. And the buyers just really didn't understand. The issue was there was just one mortgage still owed against the property. It's not technically owed. We paid it off in January when they closed, but the release that was filed by that lender of that mortgage did not line up with the original mortgage recording. So then I called that lender and said, hey guys, you know, there's a problem with the release. This is what the issue is. Can you file a new release? And within the same day, that lender got back to me. They're like, here's the new release. It's already been filed. We already submitted it to the courthouse. All in all, really was not a big issue. But when the buyer calls you at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning,
and they're in a panic,
my property has 4 liens and I just purchased it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're glad that they had their title insurance. I'm
sure. Well, and that, like, that speaks to all the different things that you do, that, you know, go unrecognized, I believe. Mm-hmm. It gets as simple as, I have so many people, when I'm talking to them, like, especially filling out like a list, even a listing agreement, and putting their current loan information on that listing agreement,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, that's so that when you sell the property, the current mortgage can be paid off. And they're like, oh, we don't have to do that. And I'm like, no, it'll all be taken care of for you. You know, you're not going to get a check, you know, for $100,000, and then you're going to have to go pay off your balance. Like, it's when you sign the closing paperwork,
it's done,
and you're moving on to the next.
Yep.
And just the simplicity of being able to do everything at one time. And even like with a proceeds check, like have it wired to an account, have your agent pick it up for you. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's just daily business. But I don't think anyone thinks about that. And
right.
So that's why I was like, I love asking you questions about different stuff. And, you know, you're always like very thorough and explain things. And I like being well-versed in that. Even though I don't have to deal with it like you do,
mm-hmm.
but I have to know about it, you know, just on a
conversation. Yeah, you can coach your customers
basis.
Through of this is what is going to happen, you know, that you have a concept of settlement and
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen and how it works, so that when they come to me, they kind of have an idea of what's going to take place.
Yep.
And it just makes for a smoother closing if they get little tidbits along the way, so that when they get there, they're like, oh yeah,
yeah.
Blake mentioned that you would pay off our mortgage.
Yes, especially when they're working with a lender that also is informed and kind of talks, you know, the client through everything. And that's, you know, all goes back to that, the local thing with relationships. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. I've had several local, you know, mortgage people in to be on the podcast, and I just try to always coach people on how important it is to be able to work with somebody that if you have a problem, you can find them and you mm-hmm. can call them or you can pop into their office. You know, same thing with you. I mean, if it's me, I try to keep my clients from directly contacting you, but
sure.
That's why I'm in the office and I can come over and ask you a question if there's some sort of issue.
Right. And it works both ways. Sometimes it's easier for me to say, hey, Blake, do you know, you know, ABC about this customer, you can answer it that way. I'm not calling them, interrupting their workday for something that you already
can answer.
Know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm looking at my thoughts here. What else I wanted to talk? What is your favorite part of your job? Because you do a lot of different things. I know that getting a hold of people, getting information, that can be a hassle sometimes. But what's your favorite part?
Just the customer relationship. Most people we only see once or twice.
Yeah.
You're only buying a house once every 10 years. But I have a lot of like investor clients that I might see them 5 or 6 times a year. You know, you get to know them. Relationships between title, the lenders. I mean, I know, you know, I've been in it long enough that
yeah.
several lenders I consider friends.
Mm-hmm.
Several realtors I consider friends. You know, just what do you have going on? You know, what's going on with the market? You have a new listing. Just talking about
yeah.
those things within the like real estate sphere.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite part.
Yeah, and you do that well. You're probably one of the few people. I can name a few other people in Council Bluffs that like people know that work at a title company.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't been in it, you know, for quite some time, and you have the exposure at closings and meeting people time and time again, I could see how, you know, it's just like, it's like loan officers that don't go to their own closings. You know, sometimes you never really know who that person is until they go to one of those closings and you get to meet them.
Yeah, absolutely. So much is done just through email, phone calls that...
Yeah.
Yeah, then you meet the person face-to-face, like, oh.
Oh, that's you. You don't look like your headshot from
right.
20 years ago.
Absolutely.
What's something that surprises you about title or about... the people you work with? I mean, I know you see a lot of different things, but is there something that seems like you get reminded, oh, I'm surprised that people don't know that, or something like that?
I think the thing that surprises me the most is when sellers don't realize that they have a mortgage lien against the property. It actually comes up more than you would think. And a lot of times it would be like a silent second mortgage, where they're not making an active payment on that loan. It's just when they sell the property, it needs to be paid off.
Yeah.
Obviously, we just are living past the COVID years. And during that time, a lot of people were getting some of those COVID relief funds and called HUD loans,
yeah.
Housing and Urban Development. A lot of people were taking out those loans, not realizing that that amount of money that you received is now a lien against the property. So say you took out a HUD loan, you got $14,000. I think how the government and the lenders were presenting it is that now it's just a part of your current loan, which really isn't the case. It's a separate loan. It just only gets paid off
once you're
selling the property.
Yeah. And then, or once you pay off your first?
Yes.
Because that's the same thing with like a, like an IFA,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And that was kind of the scary thing in our recent market where people were able to like buy a house and then turn around and probably sell it in like a year or two and actually be able to get out from underneath it and maybe make a little money. But like, you know, for an agent, you go meet with this person, you're filling out a cost sheet. You're like, what's the balance on your mortgage?
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you, you know, say they got a $200,000 house and the balance on their mortgage is $165,000. You don't know about, unless they tell you or you do a title search ahead of time, you don't know about that outstanding balance.
Yeah.
And that can get a little hairy when they're really riding the line of like having any equity. And so I know, I mean, that happened to me one time was people did not, it wasn't a second mortgage, but it was like another lien on the property that they were unaware of. And they were only, you know, they only had like a $2,000 or $3,000 spread at the time. And then it's like, oh, you actually have another like $2,500 lien on this property. And then they were far enough along, they just wanted to get out of it, that they actually had to bring a few hundred dollars to the closing table to be able to get out.
Yeah.
And man, if you don't know about that stuff, especially when you're that tight,
yeah.
you can get yourself in a bind.
That can make a world of difference.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember when I first got into title, which would have been in 2008, 2009. So that was right at kind of the crash of the market. There were a lot of people that were bringing $5,000, $10,000 cash to closing just to sell.
Just to get out.
Property, just to get out of it. So anytime we see that nowadays, it's kind of makes you lose your breath a little bit of like, yeah. Oh no, are we getting back into that kind of market? Obviously, most people are fine. They've plenty of equity.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, certain situations come up where it can be pretty tight.
So, yeah. Yeah. Happens a lot.
Yep.
What can you, I mean, you know, can you tell me any good stories? Like, why is title, I mean, I know you can tell me a lot of stories, but like, tell me, we got to talk about a couple things. Like, tell me a story about why title insurance is important.
Sure. Yeah, like you said, I could tell you a million stories, but title insurance is important because you can search the records of the property, but there's always some sort of unknown. There's always, there could always be the possibility of somebody's cousin who thinks they should have a share in what was grandma's property at some point. And your title insurance gives you the benefit as the owner that that is your property. No one else is going to have a claim against it. Like I said earlier, you never know that there's a problem until there's a problem. And so just getting that title insurance at closing, you split the cost with, if you're the buyer, you split it with the seller. If you're the seller, you split it with the buyer. So, I mean, in your realm of closing cost, it's really not that expensive.
Yeah.
But it's going to cover your property for the longevity that you own it.
Yep.
So you might pay $600 or $700 at closing and own that property for the next 10 years.
Yep.
We see, you know, liens that come up, maybe an HOA lien has never been against the property. And now 2 years after closing, the HOA comes back and says, oh, wait, we weren't paid in 2015, 16, or 17. We see a lot of boundary line issues, disputes. In this area, it's not very common that you would get a survey ahead of closing. So there could always be a boundary line issue that comes up.
I'm just thinking of one thing that people are probably thinking like big, you know, mortgage, a property line dispute. Like, one thing I know that we dealt with on a situation was a house where the owner hadn't paid the water in a long, long time, mm-hmm. maybe trash,
yeah,
you know, some city service type mm-hmm. things. And, like, all of a sudden, there's actually a situation where the seller was basically picking up all that cost to make the deal kind of come together. And the seller's like, well, I should have to pay about this much money. And then by the time that all those things were found, it was like, oh, there's another couple $1,000 in outstanding bills that have to be cleared up first.
Yeah, because city services become a lien against the property. So here in Council Bluffs, that's your water bill, that's your trash, your garbage bill. If you ever are not mowing your lawn and the city imposes code enforcement on that, that becomes a lien against the property. And a lot of times, especially if a house is vacant, no one's really taking into account that that property, you know, the city's mowed the lawn five times.
Yeah.
That's going to be a chunk of money that's owed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all those little things. I mean, mm-hmm. and it's in my experience, I mean, those things, and I could be wrong, but in my experience, those things usually come up with kind of unique situations in the beginning. You know, this isn't like the city things and the yard, you know, the grass and those things, those are not like your typical, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner A are selling to,
sure.
you know, your typical buyer type thing. It's more of like an investment property, something kind of out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's interesting with those is that those always come down to the dollar. Like, that's truly about the money.
Yeah.
And, yep. you know, there's not a lot of emotion involved in those. It's usually like, well, it worked at this amount and it does not work at this amount. So things can fall apart just through title alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a story of that should scare people out of not having title insurance. Like, tell me like a good, like a really good one. Like, oh man, that freaked me out.
Yeah. And, I have a good one for you.
Okay.
Because we at the title company, we will not close a property unless you purchase title insurance. That's
kind of the whole point.
Package.
Yeah.
But I know an investor that used to buy properties like wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wouldn't necessarily get a title search, run it through a title company. He'd just go pay someone $60,000. They'd write up a deed and record it at the courthouse. So this particular property that he purchased had a second mortgage, a HELOC loan, that no one was really aware of for $60,000. So he bought this house, gets the deed, puts it in his name. I assume rehabbed it, remodeled it, flipped it, goes to sell it. There's a $60,000 mortgage against it. The new buyer, of course, is getting title insurance. They're getting a loan. They're getting title insurance. So at that point, it comes up that there's a $60,000 mortgage still owed on this property. So the seller had to cover that.
So he probably didn't make a lot of money on the... I mean, he probably wasn't selling it for much more than he bought it for, and then he had to cover that. So mm-hmm. he ended up probably losing $40,000 or $50,000 in the deal.
Yep.
That's why you don't do that.
That's, yeah. We always advise to get title insurance.
Yeah, and I mean, you probably have a lot of people that, like you said, you don't know until after.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably have a lot of people that call you, like, years down the road, don't you? Like,
yeah.
Especially when it comes to, like, property lines, you know, some mm-hmm. sort of dispute. Like, you probably talk to people a year after they close.
Yeah, and... for me, I don't see it as much on the closing front, but our back office, our title department, our attorney on staff, they're dealing with that. And then, of course, the underwriter who underwrites the title insurance, you know, we kind of push that over to them and then they take care of it. You know, they have their attorney team that'll step in and represent a client if need be, if there's mm-hmm. an issue or... but we go to, you know, all of the title conferences and they always share stories with us.
Yeah.
It's always interesting of like, oh gosh, I didn't even know that that could come up or that that could be an issue,
mm-hmm.
Until it is.
Yeah.
So,
one thing that I just thought of is earnest deposits.
Yes.
I feel like people seem to have like a rough understanding of an earnest deposit
mm-hmm.
when I talk about it with clients. But they don't really understand like where it goes, who mm-hmm. they write it to. I think
sure.
if I meet with somebody, I said, here, yeah, you know, write your $1,000 earnest deposit and you're going to make it out to Ambassador Title Services. They're like, who? What?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's where we're directing your title. They're going to hold the earnest deposit.
Yep.
From your experience, how often do you see an earnest deposit go to the seller? And to back up.
On a canceled
transaction. Yeah, like a buyer backs out, they're going to lose their earnest deposit, and it's going to go to the seller as quote-unquote damages. How often do you see that?
Maybe 25% of the time.
Seeing that surprises me because I knew you would say, I would say like maybe 1 in 30
okay.
deals. So
I'd say it's probably more often than that. Or not even that money goes to the seller, but maybe that money goes to the termite inspection that you've already had completed.
I didn't even think about that.
A lot of lenders nowadays make you prepay for your appraisal.
Yes.
Just because if the deal would happen to fall through, that appraisal still has to be paid for.
Yeah.
So we don't really see that on our end on the title side of it. We're usually not needing to pay that appraisal. But, you know, a lot of times there's some sort of inspection that's been completed that needs to be paid out. So then we might still be giving the money back to the buyer, but now it's less that yeah. inspection that was done.
So while I'm thinking of it, kind of a little bit of a unique one is like termite.
Mm-hmm.
So on a typical transaction, buyer's paying for their termite inspection, ballpark $100.
Yep.
Say there's termites. The house has to be treated, then it's typically the seller's responsibility to treat for termites.
Yes.
And a lot of times that gets paid through closing.
Yes.
So are you then directing that bill? Say the termite inspection gets done, the termite treatment gets done,
mm-hmm.
seller says, you can bill me through closing,
yep.
I'll use my proceeds, then the deal falls apart. Then... are these companies working with you to like potentially get their payment from that seller
mm-hmm.
since it's been treated? Or I feel like a lot of those things just get left on the line because like, especially like septic, time of transfers and all
yeah.
those things, like people are like, yeah, basically like put it on my tab
yep.
and then it gets left there.
I think that there is a lot of that happens. And so a lot of these companies are coming back now saying, no, if, like you said, on your septic, if you would like your septic report, it has to be paid for before we give you the report so that they make sure that they're getting paid. As far as termite treatment, we actually have the seller confirm via email that they understand that the treatment is happening, how much the invoice is going to be, and that they are responsible for paying that.
Okay.
Even if the property doesn't close.
Yep. But the appraisals. I mean, when I started seeing that more and more where people were paying for their appraisal at the time, and actually for a time I was putting that in their cost sheet. You know, like, and it is part of their cost still.
Sure.
But I was like, you know, at closing, you should owe roughly this amount. Well, then they started paying for that at the time it was happening, because usually that payment of that appraisal is like one of the last things that happens kind of a lot. That's why it takes us a month to get a property closed and many times because of the appraisal. Mm-hmm. And I could see how that was probably just a, you know,
oh, I'm sure they just
nightmare.
Weren't getting paid left and right.
Yeah.
Because the property falls through and and then everyone's on to the next deal.
Yeah.
And the appraiser's still sitting there saying, no, wait.
Well, and I think, you know, even myself included, is sometimes these things happen. The appraiser goes out, they do the appraisal. They kind of happen without you like physically seeing them happen. And so you kind of feel like, oh, that's that person's job. They went out there, they did that. They need paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of just... it just gets clumped in with your overall closing costs when it's really kind of a separate deal.
Yep.
Same with your septic and your termite and all your
same
other
with
inspections.
Your home inspection.
Radon system.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's what people probably don't realize too, is how all those, you know, when you're putting a closing statement together, you're not only looking at the, you know, the balance of the mortgage, the property taxes, and the other closing fees involved, but all the things that take place from day the contract's written to the day you close, and that, you know, those things need to be reviewed by everybody to make sure all the numbers are on there and that nothing gets left out, because if it closes and it's not on there, it's closed.
Yeah.
Unless you have some sort of protection, like you said, with like the termite or something like that.
Yep. Yep. You're exactly right.
Yep.
And we like to even if, like, say the seller has paid for the septic inspection ahead of time, we still like to at least even reflect that at closing, because a year down the road, somebody calls and says, hey, did that property have an inspection for the septic? You can easily pull up the closing statement, look right down at the bottom, septic inspection by 3T septic, paid outside of closing. There's the invoice number. There's the amount that was paid.
Yeah.
Even though it's not adding to their balance sheet of something that's paid at closing, at least it's on there.
Yep. Yep.
Just kind of gives everyone a peace of mind that it did happen.
A little bit of a record.
Paid for. Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
Because, man, it's hard to keep things straight after, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many people reach out to me. I know you, they do it to you too, but especially around tax time, they're like, hey, I don't even remember where I closed, who, I mean, they either remember, you know me, and they're like, we know you were involved, so can you put me into contact? And then I often have to look back at my file. Sometimes I remember like sitting at the closing table, like with you, or like if I'm at Clear Title or Midwest, I remember where I was, but a lot of times I'm like, I better make sure that's who closed it. Then I reach out to somebody there, say, hey, can you send me a copy of the closing statement? I mean, I probably came over and asked you about it the other day, but I just had a lady call me. She sold last year, moved out of state, and she's like, hey, my CPA says I need a closing statement because I'm going to have to pay capital gains. And I'm like, no, well, I'm like, I can give you a closing statement, but that was your primary residence.
Right.
You didn't make that much money. You shouldn't have to pay any capital gains. She's like, okay, well, I wasn't sure, you know, and people just don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I take phone calls like that. I mean, this is the season of those phone calls.
Yeah.
Do I need a 1099? Did I get a 1099?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have my closing statement? Do you, you know, will I need to pay capital gains? I just try to walk people through, you know, was it your primary residence? Did you sell it for X amount? Did you use it as a rental?
Yep.
You know.
Well, that's funny, because when you always ask a question, like at the end of a closing, you're like, okay, do you want this emailed to you or do you want a paper copy or both? And like, I don't think anyone ever like just says, they're always like look at each other. And they kind of think about it for a minute. And I'm like, I always want to say, well, it doesn't matter, because if you need it and you don't have it, you're going to reach out anyway. So Take either one.
Yep. Same thing. At closing, I hand them, you know, if they're asking for paper copies, I say, here's your packet. This closing statement right here is what you're going to need. Sometimes we make a little note at the top that says, take this for taxes.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the season rolls around for tax time, we still get a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, I'm sure. One last thing, Lindsay. How long, like on an average deal, say you get the file, get the earnest deposit, cash deal, for example, you don't have to worry about any financing. What's your typical timeline on getting title and being ready to close?
We request 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
From the time that we have the signed contract. And that's what's really important too, is a lot of times a contract will get signed and we won't receive it for a week. So then there's a whole week that just went by that really nothing is happening. I mean, maybe they've started getting inspections or that sort of thing. But if we can get the contract in hand, we like to have a 2 week window. Can we get it done in a week? Yeah, occasionally. I mean, as soon as the title search is complete, then we know. We get the title search back, property's clean, no liens, no mortgages, no taxes, no HOA dues, anything like that. We can prepare closing documents and a settlement statement in hours. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fairly quick process as long as everything lines up.
And everything lining up is also means everyone that's involved getting you the information that
yes.
you need. Because, I mean, I see that, you know, I haven't had any, like, real issues lately. But, I mean, you know, a situation where you reach out to an agent, you're like, hey, we need the listing agreement. And you need, mm-hmm. just so you know, commission, everything involved, and
yep.
then that takes a few extra days, that adds a few extra days onto the process,
yep.
and then they get mad at you when it doesn't close on time.
Yeah. Or you reach out to the seller to say, okay, we're ready for closing. They're like, oh, well, I'm in Las Vegas. I'm going to be in Las Vegas for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have some things that we can do. You know, we can mail documents or we can have them sign remotely or that sort of thing, but sometimes it's, you know, there's a little hitch in the,
yeah, I mean,
everybody wants to close quickly, but then no one's around to actually sign.
Yeah. And if you have people that are, for lack of better words, like well-equipped, mm-hmm. like, you know, we just had a recent closing and you sent the documents to Columbus, Nebraska. They signed their documents, had it notarized, stuck it back in the mail, and
yep.
we closed, you know. We actually moved that closing up, and you know, if people can do it, you can do it.
Yep.
But most time, you need to come into the office, sign your paperwork.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have your information.
Bring your ID.
Bring your ID.
Bring your cashier's check.
Ready to sign. You know, or just, okay, somebody's going to sign power of attorney. You're like, great, I need the power of attorney. We have to file that at the courthouse before we file the deed. They're like, well, I don't know where that is. So then it's like, okay, now we have to find the attorney that prepared the power of attorney to see if they have a copy of it. You know, there's always
it's a lot of steps.
Yep. And
yeah.
there's always something.
Yeah.
I always tell people, if you've had a really smooth transaction, you know, there's always something that comes up.
Yeah.
Closing date that needs to be moved or, you know, sometimes I have a closing right now that we had to push back a week because the movers couldn't
mm-hmm.
be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's so many pieces to the puzzle that you just have to be flexible, go with it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
That's, or
being
at least
flexible.
That's how I feel.
Sometimes that's hard. But yeah, there's so many moving parts and sometimes you don't realize how many there are. Like you said, kind of back to what you've said before, is that until you get to that point, you
mm-hmm.
know, the movers, the logistics,
yeah,
you know, especially people closing same day,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're selling one to buy another.
Yeah.
They're like, we got to come in at 8 o'clock so we can sign our paperwork. And then all our stuff's on a moving truck. When are we going to have our money so we can, you know, close on the next one?
Yeah.
And I try to avoid those, but sometimes it's
the best
can't.
Part is just let's make a plan. Okay, we're gonna
yeah.
do this at this time and try to execute the plan as well as possible. And with you, as you and I know, we work well as a team together. We can make it happen. But then you throw in a lender and that's another piece to the puzzle. And
yeah.
then you throw in you know, this buyer that can't get off work until 4 p.m. So that throws another wrench into the pile.
Yeah.
But, you know, at ATS especially, we just strive to really be flexible.
Yeah.
You need something a little early in the morning. You need something a little after hours. You need, you know, you want to catch something on your lunch break.
Mm-hmm. And you leave the office all the time to go close different places. Yep. That's, you know, more convenient because sometimes, you know, I mean, for example, this didn't have to do with ATS, but like I had a property down in Red Oak. Seller lives in Council Bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the Council Bluffs office. The buyer's agent's in Clarinda. And it's like, hey, and then this title company doesn't have an office here in Council Bluffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, we don't really want to drive to Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to drive to Clarinda for sure. And so they just sent a person up to our office to do it.
Yep.
To and, handle the site. You know, and that just makes it so much easier for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's the nice thing about ATS having several locations too, is, you know, you're out in West Omaha, got a deal going out there, you go to Village Point. You know, your Central Omaha, go to Regency. There's an office in Sarpy,
yep,
too, right?
There's an office down on 370 and 72nd Street.
Yeah.
We also have a satellite office up in Fremont. We do a lot of stuff up in Fremont, and then we have an office in Lincoln.
Okay. Is the office in Lincoln in the new Berkshire office?
Yep.
Okay. I haven't been over there yet, but I've heard it's nice. So.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, and just being flexible.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, and I've closed at hospitals, banks, airports, I mean, you name it.
The runway.
Probably.
You're out there.
A field on the side of the road because it's a farmer and
yeah,
it's, you know, harvest. I've closed in houses as the movers are moving things in. I mean, geez, all over. Closed at the hospital closings are probably
That one's
the most difficult.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's sick. I've had a couple of cases where they're sick. They're in the hospital. They got to get rid of this property.
Well, and then through COVID, where you were walking out to people's cars,
yep,
and
doing like
drive through
closings. That's interesting. And or just during COVID, we'd have the client come into the office, wear a mask. Only the person signing could come in.
No guests.
You didn't have, you know, family. You didn't have the kids. You didn't, you know. You didn't have...
No loan officers.
Yep.
No agents.
Officers, no agents. Just come in, sign.
Leave. Use hand sanitizer.
So, I mean, the absence of the COVID situation has been nice to be able to see the agents, to have the loan officers. You know, you just bought a house. It's a,
it's
a celebration.
It's exciting.
It's a happy time. So...
Yeah.
Get the little confetti popper out and...
Yeah.
Have a
bottle
party.
Of champagne.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, that's a good note to wrap it up on, Lindsay. I thank you for taking, you know, an hour out of your day to come over and sit in the studio and talk about title. But I've been excited to get you in because I think, like, it's interesting to me. And I also, like, really value you because I love being able to ask you questions, like, anytime. And it's a huge resource for me. And it's always good knowing that, like, I can direct title and be like, I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get it covered.
Well, and if you have a question that comes up, even if I don't personally know the answer, we have a whole team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I might call someone else and say, hey, have you ever had... And there's... I mean, I've been doing this for almost 15 years, and there are still things that come up that I've never had this happen before.
Yep.
But we work through it.
Yeah.
Every time, so...
Cool. Thank you, Lindsay. Yeah. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Blake.